We are chugga lugga lugga choo choo toot toot, just chugging right along, talking more about learning teams. And in particular, on today's episode, I want to talk about some select barriers related to operationalizing learning teams within our work world. So here we go. Welcome to another episode of the Hop Nerd Podcast. I am your host, Sam Goodman, the Hop Nerd LLC. Make sure you head over to the website, www.thehopnerd.com, for fundamentals, learning teams, support, and so much more. Send us an email, thehopnerd@gmail.com, and be sure to follow along with us on all things social media at The Hop Nerd or at Sam Goodman. Welcome to today's episode. So I've got to tell you, it's going to be a bit of a weird episode. It is. And let me explain here a bit. As I'm sitting here and I am drinking hot coffee. You know me. I'm absolutely obsessed with cold brew. I live on it. I mean, I basically live on it more so than what I should, which maybe I'll talk about in a second. But I'm sitting here in my handy dandy Dark Hall coffee mug, which is an amazing little coffee shop in downtown Phoenix. They moved around a little bit, but they're still in the downtown region. That's the only reason why I kind of go downtown Phoenix. But an awesome place if you're ever looking to support a local Phoenician business. They have great coffee, cool stuff. It's neat. I mean, it's a really great mug, which is probably makes me a little pumped, is it says Dark Hall Coffee, and it's got a skeleton taking a nice little warm bath and a coffee cup on the front of it. It's pretty cool, and it's chipped up and it's dinged up, and it's all the things that you want a great coffee mug to be, but it's not cold brew coffee. So I ran out of cold brew coffee early this morning, and I haven't had a chance to go get more. And so we're going to have this conversation fueled by old school coffee. We're going to see how it goes. If it's better, I might have to change my habits a little bit. But I think back to maybe the other point is I'm obsessed with caffeine. I just absolutely am obsessed with caffeine. I love this stuff. Way too much coffee. Way too much coffee. I've been completely transparent with everybody that tunes in here. I don't need much more in life other than some great coffee. Some of those little nicotine pouches every now and again, tobacco free, right? Like a Zen, something like that. And plenty of copious amounts of red meat. And I'm in pretty good shape. I can survive for, I think, maybe at least 2 years just on that combination. I don't know what I would look like in 2 years. I don't know if I would be all that healthy in 2 years, but I could survive pretty happily over those 2 years. And I have been working. I truly have been working to cut back some of that caffeine consumption. I fall into this trap. Okay. We talk about context driving behavior. So let's throw some context out there. I'm lazy sometimes, and lazy is probably too strong of a word. I'm busy. And especially when I'm traveling, you know, my pro tip around DoorDash delivered to the hotel room. I've told you this story. I've told you this a bunch. Yeah. You don't have to eat alone looking like weird in the bar or in the restaurant, wherever you're staying at. It's just, I can't do it. I've tried. I can't do it. It's too weird. I like do this anxiety thing where I'm like on my phone, pretending like to be on my phone, or I'm calling people just so people aren't like, look at that weirdo. Like, or even worse, look at that person that got stood up on a date. And then even worse, look at that person in that's wearing a wedding ring, that's waiting on a date that got stood up either by their date or by their spouse, which I don't know which one, right? You see what I mean? It's bad. Like my mind goes boom, 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 boom. This is weird. This is weird. So I DoorDash food to my hotel room. I get to skip all that, which is nice. And then part of that is I DoorDash coffee. I schedule coffee to come the next morning so I can get up, I can work, I can get prepped up for whatever I'm doing. Like I'm traveling, right? So I'm usually out doing sessions. I'm usually doing keynotes. I'm usually doing consulting. I'm trying to get normal everyday work done on top of that, right? You get where this story is going. So I deliver cold brew to the hotel and maybe a little snack, like a little snacky poo, like those egg white bites. I really like those, the smoked, the bacon egg Gouda thing from Starbucks, right? Excellent. Good stuff. Absolutely good stuff. But when I'm super busy at home, sometimes I do it too. Jarell and I will do that sometimes. Like we're super busy, especially if we have company or we have like 100 things going on. Like I'm working, he's working. You know, we're both up super early. We're getting Avery off to school. We're trying to do this. We're trying to do that. I've got to make sure that this is happens and that happens with work. And then we've got this personal commitment, that personal. Oh, crap. We got to go. Oh, crap. I got to go get Avery. I almost forgot Avery. I got to pick up Avery from school. You know life. I'm explaining to you normal life. You know this. You live this too. We're in this adventure together. It's part of what we do. So every now and again, I will deliver it to the house. Now, the problem here is that if I'm delivering for myself, I did the whole dash pass thing. I don't know. I don't know if that really matters all that much. But what I found is that, okay, I want one Trenta cold brew. That's the big one. You know I'm ordering the big one, right? I want one Trenta cold brew. If I order one Trenta cold brew, it ends up being like $17, which I'm not going to do. Like, that's not going to happen. That's ridiculous. Like, that's two or three coffee. And don't get me wrong. I understand, like, there's a convenience fee associated with this. And I understand DoorDash's pitch. Look how many, and say it's the same with Instacart. Look how many hours you've saved of driving that 5 minutes to the coffee shop and waiting in line for an additional 5 minutes to drive home for an additional 5 minutes, all of 15 minutes, which you probably could have really used to clear your mind, to get out of that stupid office. All right, but you're busy, right? We convince ourselves that we're busy. I get all that. I know. I understand the convenience fee, but that's insane. I'm not paying $16, $17, almost $18 for one Trenta cold brew, something that I can buy in the store for, you know, what is it, $5? $5 nowadays, something like that, right? A coffee that lasts me at least half the day. That's not too bad. But here's where it gets interesting. If I order two, I exceed the minimum order, and then I get free delivery, right? So if I order two Trenta cold brews, I can get two for like $15 instead of $18. So I get two coffees for less than the price that one would cost me, but I got to order two. So then, you know me, if I order two, guess what I do? I drink two. Yeah, of course I do. I drink two. I mean, context directly drives my behavior to order those two coffees. And then, if I got a Red Bull laying around, I've got something like that, I get towards the end of the day, I'm like, man, I really need to move a little bit. I got to get out. I got to go walk. I need to go to the gym. I need to do something like that. I need to do something for my health. On with the caffeine. that's a long way, I guess, to explain how that particular reality drives what I do and how I'm starting to change that, right? I'm starting to limit my caffeine consumption. So if you see a dramatic decline in my excitability and me just being my pumpedness, does that sound right? Pumpedness on the podcast. Don't worry, it'll be back. I'm just slowly trying to not die from overly consuming caffeine, from consuming like 2 grams of caffeine a day. I'm trying to bring that down at least into a reasonable, sane person limit, right? And we know that that's not quite where I've been with caffeine. So what I want to share with you, the biggest thing that I want to share with you today is, do me a favor, go over to the website, scroll all the way down to the bottom. If you scroll all the way down to the bottom, you'll see like this little bar. I'm going to do this in real time. I'm going to the website, thehopnerd.com. Okay. I'm scrolling down all this fancy pants stuff moving around. Oh, look, there's some principles. There's more about me. There's ways to get in contact with me. Some of the stuff that we do. Oh, look, there's a nice picture of me, some books. You go all the way down. There's kind of this gray bar that goes across, you know, almost at the bottom, right up from the bottom. There's some other little sections there, but there's a gray bar and it has all those little buttons you can click. It says home and starting points and all those things. Go all the way over and you'll see something that says mailing list. Click on that mailing list thing and join. I share that with you because that's about the easiest way to know about everything that we've got going on. If you want to show us a little bit of love, a little bit of support, as so many of you do by purchasing merch or the books or liking and sharing and subscribing to stuff and reviewing the podcast and telling your friends about us and tagging us in stuff and all those different things, this is a great way to show us a little bit of support. And what's cool about it for you is you get to know when the podcasts come out. They remind you that the podcasts come out. So we send this thing out about once a week, I try my best, that we call the check-in. And the check-in has a podcast. It tells you, like, well, here's the podcast this week. It also tells you where I'm at, where I'm out and about in the world, in this big, wild, crazy, wonky world. It lets you know maybe if I'm in your neck of the woods, maybe we can meet up. Maybe we can grab some of that cold brew that I'm trying to limit myself on. Or maybe we can grab a steak. At the very least, we can hook up and like talk about hop for a little bit, right? We can go hang out. You can show me the sights if I'm in your hometown. Or, you know, again, if it's just a place you know, or maybe you just don't want to talk, but you're like, hey, this place has the best coffee, you can send me some of your local recommendations. That helps me an absolute ton when I'm in places that I don't know. And then it also, any of these public events, as you know, we've done a couple of them here more recently. We've got one coming up here in September. We've got some more that we're kind of in the works on, some public facing things that gives you an opportunity to come interact with us outside of spending time with you at your organizations. It's a great way to see those events, to see new merch, all the above. So it's just first name, last name, email. You basically hit subscribe and you're good to go. You'll start getting the check in. And I don't spam you to death or anything like that. I send one email a week. And if you're into what we've got going on here on the show, I think you'll really like it. So make sure you do that. Now, the second part that I'm really interested in sharing with you, and I've been sharing it a bunch, you've seen it, especially if you go into Spotify. If you're listening on Spotify, you'll see that the logo isn't just like the icon for the podcast anymore. It is sometimes, but you'll see unique podcast art related to different episodes. The little caricatures, a lot of times when we have interviews, or these like little concert looking posters and just cool little pieces of art. I've done a couple of those because I draw when I'm stressed, and I'm stressed a lot. No, I'm just kidding. But I do draw to de-stress, and it is fun. And some of those are friends that are artists, and some of those are independent artists that we just ask them, like, hey, like, go check out what we got going on and draw something, anything you want. Just make it cool. And so that's my ask to you, is that if you are a doodler, a drawer, a painter, a graphic designer, if you do any of those things, if you are artistic in any form, shape, or fashion, and you express that through drawing or doodling or painting or whatever, animations, whatever, send us what you got. If you feel like it, if you're looking for something to draw something for the pod. And if you do, I will gladly post it and I will gladly tag you in it. And it might just become one of the pod posters, you know, the little things that go on that little clip. So especially folks in Spotify and different places you listen, that'll change. I don't know how well that works on Apple, on iTunes podcasts, what Apple podcasts, whatever they call it in the world of the iTunes. Right. But I'll share. And so again, I would love to see it. And to me, it's just something different. It's something cool that we get to do together and we get to express ourselves together, which is just a whole bunch of fun. It's just different and freeing, freeing. It's freeing. It is freeing. Freeing. There we go. That word will come out right eventually. It's different. It's freeing. It's just awesome, especially to get to showcase some of those skills, some of those abilities, and usually things that we're really passionate about. And I'm not good at it. I'm really not all that good at doodling, but it makes me happy. It really does. It makes me happy. And so it's just something cool that we can do together. So if you've got those, just send them to me, thehopnerd@gmail.com. I look forward to sharing some of those things that you send over our way. And you know the normal song and dance, the normal spiel here. Go to www.thehopnerd.com. We'd love to help you on your hop journey. Hop fundamentals, learning teams, keynotes, you know all the stuff that I do. You can get in contact, thehopnerd@gmail.com. We'll get you on the calendar. You can set up an initial consult or introductory call over on the website. Like, share, subscribe, tag us and stuff, all the above, all the above. Make sure you check out all the books. Make sure you check out the merch shop, Operationally Curious Questions. There's a ton of stuff out there, and we greatly appreciate all of your support of everything that we've got going on here through you listening to the podcast, through those shares, through those likes, through those little things that don't seem like much, you know, to a lot of times when we're doing them. I know I review stuff, I go in and I click that like button, I share, and we don't realize how big of an impact that makes in taking this message that much farther. It really does help us continue to take this message far and wide to the world. So thank you. Thank you. Sincerely, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for all the love and support of everything that we've had going on here for a hot minute now. None of this would be possible without each and every one of you. On to today's actual subject. You know me. I just like to rant and have a conversation with you. I don't know. I always think it's just good to talk about stuff that's not this normal stuff, to just talk about normal life stuff before we jump into hop or any of these other conversations that we have. There's just something about it, just us having this real deal conversation. And that's how I view this. It's a conversation that we get to have together because so many of you send emails and notes like, hey, I really appreciate it. Oh man, I know I'm going through the same struggle with caffeine too. Here's what I'm doing. It's just great. It truly is great. So keep those emails coming, keep those DMs coming. It's awesome. It's awesome to get to speak with each each and every one of you. Today, what I wanted to talk about, the meat and potatoes of today's conversation related to human and organizational performance, at least in more specific terms, barriers to operational learning teams. So we're talking learning teams again, because I don't know, I've been on this hot kick about talking about learning teams. And what I wanted to chat about today were the specific barriers. Now, a couple things here. I'm not going to dive into everything that can go wrong, could go wrong, might go wrong, any of that kind of stuff. But I really want to talk about some really basic things here. The first one being this: our desires to fix outweigh our desires to learn. Numero uno. I hope I said that right. Yeah. Number one, our desires to fix outweighs our desire to learn. That desire only grows that much stronger when we're doing a learning team or some type of learning exercise of any kind, really, post-event. Like, that thing happened. It shouldn't have happened. We need to fix it. We need to fix it yesterday. We need 32 corrective actions, and we need those corrective actions yesterday. So what happens when we do that? And don't get me wrong. Let me rewind here a bit and say that I don't know that that desire is all that bad, but it stands in the way of effectiveness with our learning teams. Because we as people, we do have this strong desire to fix. If I'm walking through my house and I see something broken, my first instinct is this. Huh. How'd that get broken? Avery. Now that's bias, right? That's assumptions. I'm judging, right? I'm just guessing here, but I do have a 9-year-old, so that's usually the right answer. Not always, but it's 9 times out of 10, right? Let's just be honest. That's usually the answer. And then my next response, almost immediately, is, okay, let me go to the garage. Let me get some tools. Let me fix this. I gotta fix this thing. Let me fix. It's just our instinct as people. When we see something broken, we want to fix it. When we see something that needs improved, we want to improve it. And we want to improve it right now. We want to improve it yesterday, especially if that's been what we've viewed as a problem, like something that's caused us some serious headache, serious problem, an event, an issue, an injury, right? We want to fix it. We want to fix it yesterday. So again, I don't know that that's all that bad. I don't know that that is all that bad, but it does stand in the way of real and realistic improvements. Because we aggressively fix, we get so excited to fix that we maybe forget the learn part. And where we find ourselves is not basing our improvements, that's really the right word, our improvements, on operational reality. We haven't learned. We don't have operational reality. So if we're basing those things not on operational reality, what they truly are best guesses based on operational fantasy. How real and realistic will our improvement strategies be? Not so much. So we have to calm down a little bit there. Remember the goal of a learning team is to learn. Boom, you know, ding ding ding, winner, chicken dinner, you want a free pizza. Absolutely, it's to learn. It's really to gain an understanding of work, to gain an understanding of normal, everyday, usually successful work. I tend to add on this, warts and all, so we can learn and improve together. That's the goal. So we start there. We deliberately prioritize the act of learning over improving, because we know improving without the learning part doesn't ever work out that well for us. Now, one of the next things that we tend to get hung up on with operational learning teams is we think that we've got to fix everything. Again, I would change that a bit. I would actually strike out fix. We like that word. How much is left to really, in the real sense of that word, fix? How much, big capital F, or maybe all caps, fix is there left within our work worlds every now and again? But most of where we're at is really into improve mode, into make things a bit better mode, micro improvements and adjustments, you know, that kind of mode. But we'll stick with the word fix here a little bit, because that's the one that a lot of organizations use. We think we have to fix everything. And really where this goes is, if we can't fix everything, what's the freaking point? And that's just our desires for perfection coming out once again in another way. And in my opinion, we just think that if we just can't get every single little thing, if we just can't come up with the perfect punch list that addresses every single little thing that we could ever imagine needing to fix related to this issue, and if we can't just fix all those little things, then what's the stinking point? Well, the stinking point is that micro improvements and adjustments, right? We're just rendering things a bit better piece by piece, little by little, over time. Can we fix everything? Can we improve everything within our workforce? Is that really a realistic goal? No, it's just us seeking perfection again. So again, just get that out of here. Just we do what we can do. We make things a bit better. Now, another piece of this is that we expect that the process, the approach, that our people, that things are just back to being perfect, are just going to be perfect, that we've got this learning team structure and just follow it and all will be well. That hasn't worked for us in much of anything else. That's not going to work for us in learning teams. Now, we don't listen to our employees' perspectives, right? We take the information that those nearest to the work share with us and we say, nah. We shoot it down. We go, no. You don't know. They're gripe, moan. That's Bob. That's Jane. That's just what they do. They complain. Bob, Jane, complain. Bob, Jane, complain. I've been coming up with some really sick rhymes over the past few episodes. I don't know how I get there, but it's just happening. Maybe it's something to do with this hot coffee. I have to do something to make myself a bit happier as we go through this. But we don't listen to folks. We don't listen to our employees' ideas. We don't really, we defend or we really try to justify or we just dismiss the information that they're sharing with us. When they come up with really good improvement strategies, we go, nope, because I don't see the problem to begin with. And we, of course, that's going to cause us to fall flat on our face. The big one, this is the big one. And we talk about this a lot because it's one of the five hot principles. We react poorly when things go wrong. This is the thing that I share with people all the time when we're talking about the hot principles that we, at least as individual leaders, can work on doing a bit differently. It's the thing, right? We get to choose how we feel about the information that people bring to us. I know, a bit stoic, but maybe let's go a little bit farther down that stoic path. We don't get to decide. We don't have any choice in that matter, that people are going to bring us information, that people are going to say, hey, listen, this is what happened. I know I don't want to have to tell you, but I got to. The rule says I got to. And I think you need to hear it. We don't get to decide that things got sideways. We don't get to decide at that point what they're bringing us. We just have no influence over any of that. The thing that we do have a bit of control over is internally, we get to control our internal dialogue. We get to really check ourselves and tune ourselves and decide how we're going to respond. Are we going to react? Or are we going to respond? Are we going to react from a place of emotion and distrust, lash out, freak out, piss our pants, just throw a hissy fit? Are we just going to, you know, just throw a chair? Is that what we're going to do? Or are we going to respond from a place of bit of grace, a place of curiosity and care? Are we going to respond? That's something that we get to choose internally. When people bring us that information, I get to go, okay, that challenged my assumptions. That kind of freaks me out. That scares me. That actually freaking scares me. Holy crap. But information is just information. I don't have a say in this part, but I do have a say in how we move forward. So information is just information. It's not good or bad. It's just information to help us make better operational decisions. As an organization, it's information that helps me make better decisions as a leader. So let me respond from a place of curiosity and care, and let's go deeper down this path of learning and see what we can actually come up with, see what we can actually improve. I get to do that. So that's the thing, right? So again, we know this story. I don't feel that I have to share this story with you, that if people bring you operational reality and you react with emotion and distrust, they're going to stop bringing you operational reality. Can I get a duh or an amen or something in there? Like, and of course, I think duh is still probably about the most fitting there. I was trying a couple ones on for size, but I don't know. I think duh is pretty much just about it. That's the one that I like to settle on. Of course, if we react poorly, we're going to signal to those folks that it's not safe to bring us that information, really, that it's not safe to tell us the truth. So when we're really talking about barriers to learning teams, and really where we're at currently is we're talking about barriers to operationalizing learning teams. Maybe we started down this path, but these things just aren't working well for us. These are all things that are going to stand in our way. We talk about some of the key ingredients, the stuff that makes learning teams, really anything opposite to those key ingredients is going to be a pretty significant barrier. So we talk about for one of those being the first one really being an environment in which honesty is possible. If people can't tell you the truth, if you can't create that environment in which honesty is possible, things are going to go bad. If your organization doesn't have operational curiosity, well-intended operational curiosity, this strong desire up throughout in the learning team environment, outside of the learning team environment, from the front pointy end to the blunt end of the organization and everything in between, if we don't have this strong desire, well-intended desire to know more about the operational reality that exists throughout our organizations, if we're leaning into our FOFO, our fear of finding out, and we're deciding that we would rather not find out, it's going to go bad. If we're not asking better questions, if we're sticking with those traditional questions, who was it, what do they deserve based off of how bad it was or could have been, it's going to go south real quick. If we're asking those pointed questions that are designed to test our theories, to validate our assumptions, to find fault, to find blame, our normal, you know, put people in the corner under a sweat lamp and beat them with phone books until they give us the truth, and we separate people and get different witness statements, that way we can compare and see where these pesky employers are lying to us. Did you follow the rules? Yes or no. Did you violate a golden safety rule? Yes or no. Of course it's going to be bad if we're not asking those questions that actually encourage people to tell us, to teach us, to show us their story of normal everyday work. If we're skipping out on that vital thing called soak time, if we're not giving people in the learning team environment time and space to think, to ponder, to reflect, there's a reason why we keep that old saying around, I don't know, let me sleep on it, because we need that space. It's important. Sometimes I need to go look. Sometimes I need to do some really, really, really deep and meaningful research. You know, Google. I need to go Google stuff. I need to go read the manual. I don't know, but I need that space as a person. If we're not giving folks that, it goes bad. It starts to go bad real quick. Same thing with the goal. We know the goal. We've mentioned that early on, right at the beginning of this episode. If we don't value and prioritize learning over improving, we're going to end up in a weird spot because our improvement strategies aren't going to really make things all that much better. Learning is the key point here. And if we're just taking our actions and throwing them out into the world, without a bit of micro-experimenting in a small-scale, safe-to-fail environment. If we're skipping micro-experimenting and we're saying, nope, this came out of learning team, this has to be, you know, this is a golden egg, we're just going to run with it. Well, you find those every now and again, sure, but I would still encourage you, test it out. Make sure that it's going to work, number one. Number two, examine for unintended side effects that will always come about with all of your improvement strategies. Doing micro-experimenting, taking that little bit of time, putting those things in the hands of the people that need to use them, trying things on for size. It just saves you a ton of pain and problems and frustration and time and money later on. So make sure that we're keeping those key ingredients in our learning teams. Again, those are the things that make learning teams a learning team. So I think the last thing that I'll finish here is maybe like pre-learning teams in your organization. Just a couple little brief things. And the first question that you really need to ask yourself is, where are we currently at? Are we ready for learning teams? Are we ready? Are we ready for operational learning teams? Really? And what I mean by that, and we all feel like we're pumped and we're ready to go, but are our organizations ready? What I mean by that is, have we laid the groundwork? Have we had these conversations a bit? And they could be informal, but have we had this conversation? Have we started to embed the HOP principles? Have we started to build a little bit of HOP fluency within our organizations? Are we starting to understand that error is normal, that blame fixes nothing, that learning is vital, that context drives behavior, that how we respond matters? Have we started to embed some of those ideas from safety differently, that people are the solution, right? They're not the problem. They're a problem solver. We need to ask them what they need and on. Have we started to have some of this conversation around the 10 ideas that we need to start from a place of trust, that we need to do things with people rather than two people and on? Have we started to lay some of that groundwork so that when we pull out that tool of learning teams and we start to do those, it actually has a good chance of being successful? Are we ready? Because the very last thing that you want to do is set up a learning team that maybe you've based on the hot principles and uncover. These people will trust you and they share with you. And then the hammer comes down. Well, they said they violated the rules, so we fired everyone on the learning team. That's south. That's going real south. That's real bad. So are we ready? Are our leaders ready? Is our organization ready? Are we ready for the truth? You can't handle the truth, right? Are we past the we can't handle the truth phase? Are we past that? Are we ready for raw and real? Are we prepared? So just some things that I wanted to share with you. Most of that on the we're operationalizing learning teams. These are things that are going to stand in our way that I want to share with you. And a little bit on maybe pre-operationalizing learning teams that I shared with you there. Now, a couple of the last things that I'm going to share with you, and I'm going to go pretty quick because we've covered a good chunk of these already, but they're just a couple of things that I had scribbled in my notes and something that we talk a bunch about with learning team facilitators and we talk a bunch about with leaders around learning teams. Is we start to go wrong when we go over-proceduralized, we overcomplicate the process. This process is simple, it is clean, it is a flexible framework, it is a bit sexy, right? And that's the point. It's flexible, it's not some rigid linear something. It allows us to go where we need to go and learn what we need to learn, to get a little bit messy with learning, because work is messy, so learning needs to be a bit messy too. At some point, we do a couple of these, and we're good at not getting overcomplicated. We're good at not over-proceduralizing them. But like around number two or number three, we freak out and we go, we're doing something without a procedure. We're doing something without a procedure. We're doing something without a procedure. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Our employees are children, and we need to give them a user manual for everything. We can't just let them do this on their own. Oh my God. 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 80-page procedure. And it doesn't end well. Don't do that. I'm not telling you can't have some information. You can't have some guidance. I'm not telling you can't have a procedure, and especially where it says, okay, here's the roles and here's how we feed these ideas into our action tracking system, because we know that when we put stuff in our action tracking system that it helps us get it done. And I'm not telling you can't have some of that framework and you can't couple that together to make it work well in some of the systems that if they are working well for you, you should definitely keep doing, right? Yeah. I'm not telling you can't do that. What I am telling you is don't over-proceduralize. Don't overcomplicate. Should a learning team procedure be 87 freaking pages long? No, because when you make an 87 page long learning team procedure, especially after everybody under the clear blue sky has told you not to do that, guess what you end up doing? You end up going, oh my God, why is our learning team process not working? Why are people not using this? I need to call Sam or somebody like Sam to have them come in, and guess what I do? I help you undo those 87 pages. I would much rather spend time with you doing something else. I love spending time with you, but we could do something way more fun than pry apart an 87-page procedure that you shouldn't have had in the first place. So avoid that. Avoid that. Avoid that at all costs. We know learning team crazy. We get excited. We try to do them for everything. Don't try to do them for everything. Do them where they can't. We get too strict. Only leaders can do learning teams. Only our trained and overly qualified facilitators, this list of three people for our entire organization of 10,000, can facilitate learning teams. Don't get so strict. Again, keep it flexible, okay? Keep it a bit flexible and slow down. We know fast. We try to learn. We've talked about this a bunch because this is a big one. It's one of the hardest things for us to overcome, right? There's two things here. To overcome our desire to fix, right? To actually slow down and learn before we just jump into improvement mode. That's the hardest part for a learning team facilitator, honestly. I mean, really, really. That is the hardest thing, is keeping a group from just diving straight into improve mode. Nope, staying in learning. Nope, stay in learning. Come back to me. Yep, that sounds a whole lot like improvement. Let's stay in learning mode. Let's stay in there. Jot that down. If you need a little bit of help remembering it, we'll come back to that tomorrow when we do our second session. Come back to me. That's one of the hardest things, right? as a learning team facilitator. But then it's also this, that especially post-event, we want to fix and we want to fix now. And sometimes we fix before even we have all the event information. We've already issued corrective actions. Let all that information come out. Let the facts emerge. Find that sweet spot of learning and improving, and then do your learning team and prioritize learning and spend that session learning, and then have that soak time, and then move towards improvement, and then micro experiment those ideas before you take them to scale. Micro experiment in a small scale, say to facilitating, and then go and then follow up and do some effectiveness review and some follow up and make sure that things are working well for folks. Yeah, that's way better than just saying, oh my God, I want to fix and I want to fix now. Screw learning. Here's my ideas. Take them to scale. Make it work. Because that doesn't work. So there you go. I know that was fast, and I was talking fast, and I apologize. If you have to pull that down to like half speed, I think this hot coffee just hits a bit different. So I apologize if I got a little rambly, and it's not cooled my tongue, so some of the words were coming out a little bit weird there too, but that's okay. I'm going to blame it. I'm going to blame it on this. Of all things, it is vanilla-flavored hot coffee, which is interesting. That's all I had in the cabinet left because I just don't drink it. And it might be bad and old. I don't know that coffee is bad, but it's definitely old. But it's working. It's working enough for us to have this conversation. But there are some things. There are some of the main barriers that get in the way of operationalizing learning teams prior to even getting to that point of saying we're going to do learning teams while we're doing learning teams. And some of the stumbling points that we really find along the way, you can avoid just about all those with a little bit of thought and a whole bunch of effort, right? Try your best to avoid those where you can. And I always want to bring you back to those key ingredients. We know those key ingredients, right? The things that make a learning team a learning team. If you don't have those, an environment in which honesty is possible, operational curiosity, better questions, soak time, giving people that space, right? The goal of a learning team is to learn, micro experimenting. If you don't have those things, or if you haven't embedded some of those hot principles, you don't really believe those things from the hot principles, errors, normal, blame, fixes, nothing, context, trust, behavior, learning is vital, how we respond matters. If you don't have those things within your organization, you can take that framework and you can go out and do a, here's my real big air quotes, do a learning team and not actually do a learning team. If you don't have those key ingredients and you don't have those principles, you run the risk, the real serious risk, doing more of the same and calling it something different. And that's a bad day. Thanks for listening, everybody. We greatly appreciate all of your support of the Hot Nerd Podcast, the Hot Nerd LLC. If you need a little bit of help bringing human and organizational performance to life, if you would like to take your efforts around learning and improving to the next level, yep, I can help with that. Head over to www.thehotnerd.com or send me an email, thehotnerd@gmail.com. Until next time, bye, everybody. Bye.